Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. We're talking today about how much of a responsibility companies and manufacturers have in the disposal of the waste from their products, including things like cardboard boxes they ship to you. Couple of guests for you today. Back with us, Melissa Johnson, the president of Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin. We'll call it ARO most of the time on the show today. And she's also director of the Marathon County's Solid Waste Department. Melissa, welcome back. Good to have you with us.
It is a pleasure to be with you again.
Mark Walter, our guest as well. Mark, the chair of the Product Stewardship Advisory Committee of ARO. He's also the business development manager at Brown County Port and Resource Recovery and treasurer of Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin. Mark Walter, welcome. Thank you for joining us.
You're welcome. Glad to be here.
So as we visit with them, I hope you'll join in with your own questions and concerns about packaging and recycling. Give us a call at 800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. Melissa, let's start with you. We've had you on the show in the past to talk about how we can be better recyclers. As someone in the recycling and waste industry, how much time do you spend thinking about the full life cycle of a product like that very often?
Let's just say I dream about it, so it kind of never goes away. When you're in the waste management world, the resource management world, that's all you do is think about things. Is, you know, when I go into a grocery store or Menards or Fleet Farm or Target or wherever, and I look on the shelf and I see a product that I want and it's now in a new package, and that package is, let's say, a blister pack, which is the bane of everybody's existence because you can't open them. They're not recyclable. And now you've got this extra layer of waste. And in my world, people think that we are like magicians. We're garbage magicians. And we can somehow take in, magically make it all better. Well, sometimes it's just garbage. And that's really a challenge. We can't fix everything. And we really need people in that system, manufacturers, wholesalers, retailers, consumers, and us solid waste folks working together on trying to manage all of that.
For sure. Well, Mark, you're in charge of something called Product Stewardship Advisory Committee of ARO. Tell us a little bit about your background and expertise and then how you ended up with that title.
Wow. Well, how I ended up with that title is we were looking for somebody to chair the Product Stewardship Committee and really get people talking about what product stewardship is versus just recycling by itself. My background is very diverse. I mean, I'm a map maker by education. I have a degree in cartography, so that's completely 180 degrees from what I'm doing these days. But nonetheless, you know, 10 years of experience working on the job, working with recyclable materials, working, seeing what's coming through our door, and having a certain degree of frustration with what we see coming through. And as Melissa said, people expect that we will have all the answers for what's being recycled or what they're putting in the recycling bin. And we don't. We can't have all the answers. We really need to be taking a look at the whole, as you had mentioned earlier, life cycle of a product. So where is it starting and where is it ending up? And how do we make that product, that thing that was manufactured into something that can continue to go through the whole society and become a benefit to it as opposed to just being thrown away or having its end of life come through our system.
That sounds like the whole thing of what is product stewardship.
That's exactly it. trying to explain to people what product stewardship is most people actually intuitively know what it is. When you buy a car battery these days, you pay a couple of bucks for that car battery. And when you return it, you get those couple of bucks back. And the manufacturers have taken on the responsibility of recycling that product. It's one of the most successful programs nationwide. Something like 90%+ of all car batteries sold are recyclable. And we're talking about I got to clarify this. And this is where things get a little bit nuanced. We're talking about the lead acid batteries, the old car batteries, not necessarily electric vehicle batteries, which are another whole discussion. But if we could have that kind of program for more products that are very, that have a value, but are very difficult to dispose of just by themselves, that's where product stewardship comes into the conversation.
Yeah. Thinking about car batteries, those lead acid, you know, they're, no matter what battery, what make you buy, it's going to have that same component. And that's probably, in a way, easier to wrap your head around than all the other different kinds of products that we got out there that look different and so forth.
Yeah, that's exactly correct. And part of it is getting the manufacturers to take on some responsibility for what they're making, so that, you know, the way most of our system works, when you buy something as a consumer, you have a certain expectation, or maybe you hope that the manufacturer has thought about what happens when you're done with that product. And that's not always true. In fact, it's not true very often. You know, what is the end of the life of that product? Whether it's a toy or whether it's a car battery or whether it's your refrigerator, you know, what happens when you're done with it? Getting the manufacturers and the consumers and the legislators all involved in this thought process helps us deal with some of the hard to recycle things, or the waste that we don't want putting into, going into landfill, or some product that actually has some materials in it that are still valuable when you're done with it. So, you know, refrigerator, yeah, most of it's metal. So, you know, you want to recycle all that as much as possible.
Well, Melissa, how, do we have an idea of how much of our waste is the result of packaging and shipping? Any idea at all?
I do not. I think we have some, there might be some numbers out there, and I don't have that information with me right now. The one thing, we talk about packaging, and you were talking about cardboard earlier, about, you know, all those packaging arriving on your front stoop. We've been very, very successful at capturing all of that cardboard. So that is one success story. And in Wisconsin, that's a good thing, because we have Wisconsin paper mills that need that product. So PCA and Tomahawk, a big portion of their feedstock is all of the post-consumer cardboard you're getting out there. A little bit more challenging are some of the plastic packaging that's now popular for things. So envelopes that sometimes don't have markets for them and everything. And we've had this conversation, Larry, about, you know, we can recycle a lot of things, but if there aren't markets for them, so an end user, a manufacturer who can make it into something else, we can call it recyclable all we want, but if that system isn't there, it really is just garbage. So, but nationally, some of the recycling numbers, I think we're at 32-33% of, you know, nationally that we're successful in recycling. There's a lot more that can be done.
So as we talk with our two experts today, what questions do you have about product stewardship? What do you want to know about products and recyclability? Maybe you think manufacturers and retailers should have to take more responsibility for their packaging waste. Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email us. The email address is ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Keith from Baraboo was wondering if there was any use of industrial hemp for a medium to take out containers, or a container for a more sustainable option.
That is a really good question. I think industrial hemp plays a significant role in a lot of ways, from oils to fibers. I am not an expert on it, and I think there's probably a fair amount of research going on, but if it is a product that has a more, from a, so its origins are from a more sustainable perspective to a life cycle that can be captured for other things later on in life, it certainly seems to make sense. I don't know how hemp fibers would integrate with other fibers like plastic fibers. There may be problems there. What do you think, Mark?
Yeah. And again, it's actually kind of the same concern we have with compostable plastics. Mm-hmm. Compostable plastic may have the same general chemical structure as petroleum-based plastics, but they can't be recycled together. There's no way to really tell the differences there. So it's part of that whole product stewardship concept of actually starting at the beginning of the manufacturing process, the development process, and looking at the whole life of that product and seeing whether or not it can come back around and be recycled and be put back into the manufacturing process as a raw material. And how will it integrate with other materials that are already out there? Because you know, that's inevitable that there's going to be a mix of things out there. Hemp is probably a fairly good option in some ways. I don't know that much about it either.
Well, you wonder if you couldn't legislate some of this. You were talking about the two different types of plastic that look exactly the same, but they can't be mixed together, and yet they're always probably are or often are. Is legislation an issue on this? Or
well, you know, you can only legislate to a certain extent as well. We would certainly love to engage the legislature in these discussions, how best to manage these waste streams, and engage manufacturers, because the legislation needs to be focused on saying, hey, you at the local level. So the people who pay for our waste management, whether it's waste disposal, composting, or recycling, is our towns, villages, and cities. So taxpayers or citizens, you know, our taxpayers are paying for it. Left out of this discussion is the manufacturers who walked away with profits. And so in order to get them back into this discussion, other than Mark's example of course, the battery manufacturers, that lead acid battery manufacturers, is it may take what's called extended producer responsibility laws. And that's where the legislature says, hey, company X or all of you manufacturers of this widget, this is really hard to hard to recycle, hard to manage in its end of life care. We need you at the table. That's kind of what we did with the electronics recycling law, mm-hmm. is the law says, mm-hmm. we've got all of this stuff, whether it's laptops or computers or televisions. And the legislature said, you know what, manufacturers, we need you to help us here. So what you're talking about, Larry, is absolutely true. We do need, from my perspective, laws that would help engage those manufacturers.
Talking today with Melissa Johnson, president of Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin. Mark Walter chairs the Product Stewardship Advisory Committee of Aero. I'm Larry Mueller. Natalie Guyette and Jill Nadeau, both our producers today on the show. Christina Myshock, our engineer. You are listening to the Ideas Network. Taking a look at product stewardship and extended producer responsibility in the recycling area with our two guests, Melissa Johnson. She's director of Marathon County Solid Waste Department, and Mark Walter is business development manager at Brown County Port and Resource Recovery and a treasurer at Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin, both connected with Aero, as we've been talking about. And lots of callers online. Let's take some calls here. Ramsey in Waukesha, let's go to you. Hi, Ramsey.
Well, hi there. I have a small business, and I just purchased a shrink wrap that's supposed to be biodegradable called BioFlynn, I believe I'm pronouncing it. And I was wondering if your guests know anything about that, if it's going to be able to actually be compostable with other plastics. I understand now that there's a problem with getting the right plastics together. And I also seem that my customers seem to hold me more accountable to provide, just more earth-friendly products and packaging. So, I'll take my answer off the air.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Ramsey. Good questions. Melissa, you want to start?
Sure. So biodegradable, just most things are biodegradable if they're organic in nature. Our bodies are biodegradable if you want to get right down to it. But these plastics that are called biodegradable end up biodegrading into what's called microplastics. And of course, we see microplastics accumulating in our water and in fish and in us, in fact. So it depends how that biodegradable plastic is going to be used and where it's going to be placed. If it's put in with compost, we could end up with many pieces of plastic within the compost. So we love these terms, and they're marketed to us as a way to make them appear green. They may not be entirely biodegradable or recyclable, depending. You got anything else to add to that, Mark?
Yeah. So when you're looking at the a biodegradable plastic, as Melissa said, there actually are two kinds. There's a biodegradable plastic, like she said, that breaks down into small microparticles that is petroleum based. So it doesn't actually biodegrade there's a different term that's escaping me at the moment, but it's just breaking down into very, very small parts. Biodegradable plastic can also be made out of cornstarches and other natural substances, and that will actually degrade down to the point where it gets into nature and is a benefit to it. The problem with both of them, though, is that most compost facilities don't generate enough heat, don't get hot enough to actually degrade a lot of these plastics. Your backyard compost bin will never, or will take years to break down biodegradable plastics of any kind. You just can't put stuff in there. Yeah. You need an industrial size biodigester of some kind to actually break them down.
Carol in De Pere, we'll give you a chance. Hi, Carol.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I have several questions. First of all, the different plastics, and I'll have to go by where I find them. A store bag or a soft plastic, a Ziploc type bag that's clean, I put and return to the store bins. The kind of plastic I worry about is the waxy one that perhaps is in your cereal box, or the type of paper you take off the top of the cottage cheese container. It's more of a crinkly plastic. I don't know what to do with those, and so I wonder about that. And my second question is, I am blind. I have a lot of Braille, which is paper, but there are staples in the magazines. There's no heavy binding, just the staples. Can I recycle that?
Mm-hmm. All right. Sure. I'll take the easy one, and that's the staples. staples can stay in your papers. That's absolutely fine. That won't cause a problem. Please don't try to remove them and possibly hurt yourselves. That's the last thing we want. As it relates to the cellophane type plastics, those wrappers, I'll let Mark talk about that a bit because he runs a large recycling program.
Right. And for the most part, the types of plastic film that you're talking about, first of all, they're not recyclable curbside. So you can't put any kind of plastic film, whether it's shrink wrap, whether it's wrapping around a package or whatever, or the plastic bag in a cereal box, none of them are recyclable curbside. In terms of what kind of film you can recycle, there's a general rule of thumb that if you can push your finger through it fairly easily while it's stretching, it's probably recyclable. But if it resists like cereal bags do, it's probably not recyclable with all the rest of the plastics. And plastic bags are actually typically the Ziploc bags are pretty recyclable as film, but they've got to be taken back to a place where they're collected separate from all the other stuff that goes in your curbside bin. In terms of other plastics that might be on top of a cottage cheese carton or yogurt or something like that, most of those are probably, unfortunately, you're probably going to have to throw it out. It's not going to either make it through the recycling system because it's too small, or it's just not the right kind of plastic. The big thing, we've made it pretty easy for people to recycle, and you actually have to start thinking a little bit more about putting it into your garbage bin in some cases, especially with plastics.
So from the, let's take that cottage cheese, for example, from the manufacturer's side of things, mm-hmm. what could a manufacturer do perhaps to make that lid that Carol was talking about, or that thing that you have to pull up to get at the cottage cheese, recyclable?
Well, but let's just step back a minute, because I think we're kind of vilifying plastics, and plastics play a role in keeping us safe. And so at some point we as society have to figure out, you know, how much safety do we want in our food packaging? And that thing you zip off the top of your container of cottage cheese or sour cream, that has helped keeping the product fresh for a longer period of time, which is a value to us, because if we're buying it after it's been on the shelf for 3 or 4 days, a week, we want to know that it's got a long life, its freshness. So let's remember that plastics and packaging play a role in food safety, food preservation, and shelf life of those things. Could they look at a type of material that could be more recyclable? They certainly could, and I suspect they probably are. We have to also remember that recycling, everything that we do, every time, almost every part of our day, from the time you get up to the time you go to bed, we have impacts. So recycling is just this tiny, tiny bit in this overall equation, because it's the end of the three R's. It's reduce, reuse, recycle. So if consumers continue to consume, which we do because we should eat, we should wear clothing, we should brush our teeth and comb our hair and all those other things, there are always going to be impacts. So we should think about waste reduction strategies first and foremost, and ask manufacturers and product packaging designers, can we still achieve product freshness, product safety, using a different method? That's where that starts.
That makes sense. Jim in River Falls, let's turn to you. Hi, Jim.
Thank you for having this program. Actually, I thought of another question, too. So I have two questions for you. The first one is, with plastics that are, you know, things like styrofoam that are not readily recyclable, or like those films on top of cottage cheese containers, and getting rid of those microplastics in the environment, is it more beneficial? I live in the country, to burn that. And I know, you know, burning at high heat with scrubbers and stuff, you can do it cleanly. But if you don't use, and I know burn barrels can generate PCBs, but if you're burning, you know, if you have a lot of wood and a real hot fire, does that reduce the impact of having that stuff in the environment over throwing it into a landfill? And then another, I listened to a program on public radio, and they interviewed one of the, I think he was a PR director for DuPont back in the 70s. He said, you know, already back then, they knew that recycling just wasn't efficient monetarily, and as well as the fact that non-virgin petrochemical plastics didn't hold up as well as stuff coming from you know, new petroleum products, and that, you know, the petroleum industry now really doesn't, they're making this new PR effort to say, oh, we can recycle everything, but he said he thinks that's kind of false. He said that's what he did back in the 70s. He doesn't really see that the recycling process for these petrochemicals has really improved that much.
Jim, thanks for calling. Melissa, start with you.
Great questions. Yeah, sorry, Larry, I didn't mean to talk over you. So I'll take the burning one, Mark, and you take the next. Is that good? Okay. So please don't burn garbage, and whether it's polystyrene or plastic film or food waste or whatever, you may be able to get that hot enough to avoid the production of dioxins, and you need a chlorine particle or atom to actually make dioxins. So, and wood actually frequently contains a naturally occurring chlorine molecule. So the problem with burning is, backyard burning, is that we're going to produce a lot of pollutants in the form of particulate matter. There's going to be other things as well that, you know, we can certainly talk about it at another time, but it may get rid of what you're seeing as the waste product. However, you're sending it up in the air only to be breathed in by your neighbor 2 miles away or 2 blocks away. So we really discourage the burning of plastics and other garbage.
And Mark, the other half of that?
The other half of that was dealing with recyclability or the quality of recyclable plastics versus virgin plastics. And in from what I've read, from what I've experienced over the years in terms of those products, recyclable products are just as good. The plastic is just as good as virgin plastic. I mean, there is chemically, there's really no difference there. There has to be some refinement of the recyclable plastic to remove dyes and to get everything to be the same kind of plastic so you can recycle it. But making containers from those is the same as making it from petroleum products. And it's actually a lot, far, far more energy efficient because you don't have to refine the petroleum to get to the plastic. So that all that energy expended in making that from taking the product from a virgin material to an end product is the energy usage is reduced dramatically. In some cases, you know, we always use the example of aluminum in terms of that example of reduction of energy use. You know, it takes 9 or 10 times as much energy to produce aluminum from bauxite ore as it does to recycle a can. So, and that's true across the spectrum for recyclable commodities. Plastic is no exception, and the quality of that plastic is still really good. I mean, there's no difference you would know.
And I just want to address also the costing the gentleman had mentioned is, you know, so oil companies and logging companies and other virgin or mining companies are frequently awarded and provided an abundant amount of tax credits that affect their bottom line and sometimes affect the price we pay for a product. For oil, there's a lot of subsidies related to oil. In the world of recycling, we don't have those same sort of luxuries. You know, the federal government has not said we value recycling so much, we're going to subsidize or provide as many tax credits to you as we do to the oil manufacturers. So it's not an apple to apples comparison when we look at that on its face.
Mo and Okado, we'll turn to you next. Hi, Mo.
My question or comments have to deal with this. First of all, I think, Larry, having a program in the future on the health, how plastics affect our body health, would be a great one to have. The last caller had mentioned that Insider with the oil industry, I believe it was a 60 Minutes program, and he was saying, yeah, that's been a bait and switch of saying we recycle this and they really don't. Some companies are using recycled products, plastics like Patagonia. They're really doing a lot with that now, recycling everything from plastics to down to wool. But my question is this. You have people that buy cases and cases of water instead of using some type of insulated cup or thermos or something like that. But my understanding is you go from a product 1 or 2 down to a 3 or 5, and you're losing some value on that. And also in my own recycling here in Okano. They've been recycling actually oil plastic containers, which are always in the past said, we don't want oil containers. Thanks.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Mark, you want to comment?
Well, you know, if Oconto is telling you to recycle your oil containers, they're wrong, because those oil, pretty much all of Oconto County now comes through the Brown County system. So we don't want them. We can't recycle oil containers, any kind of petroleum oil containers. They just aren't there. In terms of the, I'm not quite sure what the question was on the water bottles, other than if you're, a water bottle is still a number one plastic, whether it gets recycled or as it gets recycled, it's still going to be a number one plastic through the process. It doesn't downgrade to a different chemistry. It stays PETE, and it's a very recyclable material. The problem is that there's so many of them out there that they're not getting recycled. I mean, the whole point of water bottles is talk to anybody who produces municipal water, and they'll tell you, you know, there you can get a gallon of their water for a half a cent, and you're paying $50 a case for a gallon of water, you know, or whatever it might be, but you're paying 100 times more for bottled water that is not even as controlled as the stuff you're getting out of your tap. And then you have to deal with that plastic bottle at some point along the line. And you know, the recyclability, they're very recyclable, but they're not a lot of them are getting recycled. There's some estimates are that only about 20% of all the water bottles that are produced are actually ending up being recycled. If we could capture them all, we'd be in much better shape.
Robin in Portage, your turn. Hi, Robin.
Hi. I've got a list of questions. We'll start with the one that isn't plastics. Glossy paper, is that recyclable? You get so much of this in the junk mail, and some of it is harder paper, and some is flimsy. So I'm not sure about that.
That's and then, recyclable.
Yes, it is recyclable.
Okay, yeah. And then styrofoam noodles. And then the plastic grocery bags, and then those clear plastic bags that the vegetables, when you buy vegetables and fruits, are they recyclable? And then the magazine plastics that cover magazines, then if they say recyclable on there, can you put them in with the other plastic bags if they are all recyclable?
Okay. Lots of questions there. Mark, do you want to take a crack? And Melise is probably too.
Sure. No, those are great questions. And we get asked a lot of those questions. The first caveat on all this is sometimes it really also will depend on where you live. I'm in Northeast Wisconsin, and we have one of the largest recycling systems in the state that cover, it's owned by three counties. So we have a lot more options because we have such a high volume of material coming through there in terms of what we can recycle. In terms of her questions, though, on plastic film, vegetable and produce bags, that actually will depend also on what kind of bag it was. Grapes come in a kind of a crinkly plastic that's not recyclable with the rest of the plastic bags. But the produce bags that you grab at the counter, you know, at the store when you put some apples or oranges in them, those are recyclable. How do you tell the difference? The best way is there is a website for the initiative to recycle plastic bags called plasticfilmrecycling.org, and they have some really specific information on what you can put into your plastic bag collection and take back to the store. Again, the one message we really want to just get out there is that don't put it into your curbside bin because it won't be recycled.
And that another is an great expense. Resource. Yeah. Oh, I was just going to say another great resource is recyclemorewisconsin.org. That is owned by Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin, and our experts from throughout the state help populate that website and has tons of information that answers many of those questions.
Yeah. What about somebody else wondered about recycling old cell phones? Those are recyclable, aren't they? Sure. Part of electronics.
And, yes.
Yeah, and actually, they're that's a great example of something that we would nationwide. I think we would love to have some type of product stewardship effort concerned with cell phones, because if you're familiar with the term planned obsolescence, cell phones exemplify that. You know, they're not designed to be repaired. You can't take out the battery on a lot of them to, you know, if the battery dies, you're out of luck. You got to get a new phone. And we were kind of pushed to get new phones every so many number of years. There is definitely, though, a market for those used phones. When they're at the end of the life, there are a lot of places that will take them. A lot of hazardous waste facilities. Brown County runs a hazardous waste facility where we take cell phones. There are several private enterprises like Bulbs and Batteries Plus, which is a franchise around the country, and they take those for recycling as well. There are a lot of charitable organizations that will take cell phones for recycling. So, yeah, they're very recyclable.
We have time. Let's see. Sandra in Mount Pleasant, thank you for calling.
Taking my call. I'm not wondering about recycling a product, but I am concerned about all the detergent and soap containers. I've been seeing advertised, I think it's on my Facebook, a product that is, it looks like a dryer sheet, but it's soap. And then you just throw that in with your wash and it dissolves, it's soap apparently. But I'm reluctant to order something that I'm not sure it's USA or, you know, I'm not sure if anyone else has tried that or, you know, I'm waiting to see it in the local stores and I haven't, but that would be a great boon to the, to the environment.
Well, you know, we see all kinds of things, all kinds of products being pushed, you know, towards us for us to review and evaluate. Remember that large detergent bottle that you buy at the grocery store, your laundry detergent, whether it's Tide or Purex or whatever you're going to buy, that container is HDPE. It is a very recyclable, very, very recyclable plastic. And if you buy that very, very big container, it's going to do whatever it advertises, 80 washes or 90 washes or whatever out of one container. So it's a waste reduction strategy, actually. Let's use this large container to do the work of what this could be, many, many sheets. So remember that those detergent containers, extraordinarily recyclable. So don't discount them.
Well, we've gone from the manufacturer to more to the consumer level once again.
Yes.
But you know what? I certainly always learn something about it. And I guess we're going to have you back again and talk down the road here on try and get some more at that, a little bit more on the manufacturers and what can be done. But I certainly appreciate you being with us today. You both did a wonderful job. Melissa, Mark, thank you very much for being with us today.
You're welcome.
Yeah, my pleasure. Always fun talking.
Yeah. Anytime you want us back, we're always happy to talk.
You bet, yes.
We'll get them back, and we will do this again. Our two guests, Melissa Johnson, the president of Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin and director of Marathon County's Solid Waste Department, Mark Walder, chair of the Product Stewardship Advisory Committee of Aero, and also business development manager at Brown County Port and Resource Recovery and a treasurer of Associated Recyclers of Wisconsin. We'll have him back and we'll do this again. But time to turn our attention to Mike Crane. It's another edition of Mondays with Mike. Coming up next on the Ideas Network, I'm Larry Mueller.